Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 20, 2020. Midland unemployment jumps to 12.4% in May by Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Midland unemployment again rose in May as the impact of the economic shutdown because of the coronavirus pandemic and low energy prices continued to roil the local labor market. The Texas Workforce Commission Friday reported that unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, Midland and Martin counties, rose to 12.4% in May from 10.2% in April and is more than 10 times the 1.8% recorded in May 2019. At the same time, Odessa saw its unemployment rate jump to 16.5% from 13.7% in April. The city to the west recorded the state's third highest rate, just ahead of McAllen, Edinburgh Mission, and Beaumont, Port Arthur. Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, said in a phone interview that he expects the region to see such numbers for at least the next couple of months. "We won't see 3.8% as reported in Odessa a year earlier for several months," he said. Taylor said his office has received quite a few notices of layoffs and business closures, but given what's been happening, our community has come through this quite well, especially with the region's substantial growth in recent years. Reviewing unemployment insurance claims for March, April, and May, he said Midland claims peaked at 6,480 in April and fell to about 3,550 last month. For the region, he said claims rose to 15,400 in April and fell to 8,399 in May. "Things are beginning to trend," he said, as the state and the area begin to reopen. He said his offices also are preparing to reopen. The center in Odessa will be open by appointment only beginning Monday. "We're going to be prepared to work and get folks back into the workforce," Taylor stated. "For those who aren't ready, who need some training, we'll work with Midland College, Odessa College, and Howard College to provide training, use some of our training dollars for short-term training. I'm hoping to see things level out and we'll see more and more people getting serious about getting back into the workforce." There are signs of recovery in the labor market, as the commission reported a rise in Midland's labor force in May. Two, some industrial sectors recorded job gains from April to May. Midland's civilian labor force rose to 102,288 from 98,074 in April, but remains about 7,500 below the 109,702 recorded in May 2019. The number of employed Midlanders also rose by about 1,400 to 89,563 from 88,168 in April. Still, the number of employed is 18,199 below the 107,762 last May. Midland lost 900 non-farm jobs from April to May, led by the loss of 1,400 jobs in the dominant mining, logging, and construction sector, according to the commission. The trade, transportation, and utility sector followed with the loss of 300 jobs, and the other services sector with 200 jobs. The information sector lost 100 jobs. The leisure and hospitality sector came roaring back, adding 1,000 jobs from April to May, while the manufacturing sector added 100 jobs. For the 12 months from May 2019 to May 2020, the Midland MSA lost 13,600 jobs, or 11.9%, led by the loss of 9,000 jobs in the mining, logging, and construction sector. Trade, transportation, and utilities reported the loss of 1,600 jobs, and the leisure and hospitality sector lost 1,000 jobs over the last year. Other services lost 900 jobs, and the education and health services sector lost 600 jobs. The manufacturing sector lost 400 jobs, the government sector lost 300 jobs, and the information sector lost 100 jobs. Professional and business services was the only sector to report a gain over the last 12 months. It added 300 jobs. Statewide, Texas's unemployment rate fell to 13%, the first decline since March. The state added 291,000 jobs over the last month. While Amarillo reported the lowest unemployment at 8.5%, the highest was in Beaumont, Port Arthur at 17.8%. Midland unemployment, January 2020, 2.4%, January 2019, 2.3%, February 2020, 2.3%, February 2019, 2.2%, March 2020, 3.4%, March 2019, 2%, April 2020, 10.2%, April 2019, 1.7%, May 2020, 12.4%, May 2019, 1.8%. Preliminary numbers for May with April numbers in parentheses. Amarillo, 8.5, 8.8. Abilene, 8.9, 9. College Station, Bryan, 8.6, 8.7. Lubbock, 9.4, 10. Sherman Denison, 9.7, 10.3. Waco, 10, 10.5. Wichita Falls, 11.3. San Angelo, 10.6, 10.6. Texarkana, 10.6, 13.3. Killeen Temple, 10.7, 11.2. Tyler, 11.3, 12. Austin Round Rock, 11.4, 12.2. Dallas Plano Irving, 12.1, 12.6. Longview, 12.2, 12.2. Midland, 12.4, 10.1. Fort Worth, Arlington, 12.6, 13.1. San Antonio, New Braunfels, 12.7, 13.3. Victoria, 12.7, 14.2. Houston, The Woodlands, Sugarland, 13.9, 14.3. Laredo, 14.2, 13.4. El Paso, 14.5, 14.9. Corpus Christi, 14.7, 15.7. Brownsville, Harlingen, 16, 16.9. Odessa, 16.5, 13.7. McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission, 17.7, 18.1. Beaumont, Port Arthur, 17.8, 18.1. Coronavirus. City. New records for COVID set in Midland. Coronavirus total stands at 322. From staff reports. The Midland Health Department reported Friday that new single-day and single-week high totals for coronavirus cases have been set. The Health Department reported 35 confirmed cases on Friday and 122 this week, bringing the total to 322 total cases during the pandemic. There have been 193 cases so far this month, which is another record. There have been 64 cases in less than 3 weeks this month than there were in March through May, 129. The Health Department also reports 113 of those who tested positive, or 35% of the 322 cases, have recovered. There are 179 in home isolation, according to the city. 8 residents are inpatients at Midland Memorial Hospital. The Health Department also reports 18 of the 35 cases were Midland County residents in their 20s. So far, there have been 88 people in their 20s who tested positive. That is around 27% of the 322 total cases. There have been 63 cases involving Midland County residents in their 30s. The other age ranges with more than 10% of the total number of confirmed cases are 0 to 19 and 50 through 59, 35 and 34 cases, respectively. Arrest aftermath. Grand jury indicts Ty Anders on evading arrest charge. By Caitlin Randall. See Randall at MRT.com. A Midland County grand jury indicted Ty Anders on Thursday on a charge of evading arrest, according to District Attorney Laura Nodolf. Anders was indicted on one count of evading arrest with a motor vehicle, a third-degree felony, Nodolf said. She said it's punishable by 2 to 10 years in jail and/or a $10,000 fine if the defendant is convicted. Anders' arrest on May 16 made national news after a bystander video showing several Midland police officers pointing guns at him as he lay in the grass went viral on social media. The video received renewed scrutiny following the death of George Floyd, who died after a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on his neck during an arrest. An arrest affidavit for Anders detailed the minutes before the bystander video began. According to the affidavit, he failed to pull over when an officer initiated a traffic stop for allegedly running a stop sign and continued driving until he reached his grandmother's house, a distance of 2 blocks or 0.2 miles. The City of Midland released body and dashboard camera footage of the incident in response to public outcry and allegations by Anders' attorney that he'd been struck by an officer during his arrest. Nodal said at the time her office had reviewed all footage and did not see any evidence of wrongdoing by police. Anders' indictment comes ahead of a protest of his arrest planned for June 27 at Midland's Washington Park, organized by Dallas civil rights group Next Generation Action Network. Energy. Baker Hughes. Rig count is lowest since 1940. Permian stands at 132, Midland County at 12. By Mel McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. The nation's rig count continued to fall to record lows, this time joined by the Permian Basin rig count. Baker Hughes reported in its weekly rig count Friday that the U.S. rig count fell 13 to 266, its lowest since the service company began keeping records in 1940. The decline was the rig count's 15th consecutive decline and 7th consecutive record low. Reuters reported that the Permian Basin rig count tied a record low of 132 first set in 2016, according to data going back to 2011. The region's rig count was down 5 for the week. The Texas count also continued to decline, dropping 3 to 111 rigs. For a second consecutive week, Texas did not account for the majority of the nation's rig decline. That fell to New Mexico, which dropped 5 rigs to 51 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, recorded the steepest decline in drilling activity for the week, but continued to be the most active in the Permian with 31 rigs at work within county lines, down 5 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, was second with 20 rigs, unchanged from the previous week. Loving County reported 14 rigs, unchanged for the week. Martin County added 2 rigs for 13, and Midland County dropped 2 rigs to 12 rigs for the week. Culberson County saw the addition of a rig for the first time in several weeks. The U.S. rig count has dropped 60% since March. Reuters reported it is down 72%, or 701 rigs, from a year ago. Reuters quoted an analyst's note from Tudor, Pickering, Holt & Company that said, "While weekly declines have slowed a bit versus what we saw in April and May, they are likely to continue at the slower pace into the third quarter, with most operators in no rush to pick up rigs and few others still cutting activity per their plans." Justin Manley, founder and owner of Sigma Drilling Technologies, told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview that drilling activity is destined to rebound. "Crude is the one commodity that has taken vast numbers out of poverty, and the continued demand for oil will require producers to drill for additional supplies," he said. "We do have a depressed market," he said, noting that this is the second oil crisis he's faced in 5 years. The downturn from 2014 to 2016 spurred U.S. innovation that will pay dividends for years to come, he said. "The most negative impact of these down cycles is the loss of what Manley calls legacy information as industry veterans leave the industry. Industry veterans are laid off, and that legacy information never comes back," he said. "Companies hire new guys in the up cycles, but as we go through these cycles, we lose more and more legacy information. There's a whole generation of drillers with sophisticated, powerful equipment, and no one with the information to say, this is how this works, and this is what we need to do to maintain efficiency." Crane nursing home total rises to 48. Ector County confirms 25 cases. By J.C. Lewis. J.C.Lewis at HearstNP.com. Focus Care Center in Crane has reported 33 residents have tested positive for coronavirus, with 15 residents in isolation, according to a press release. 15 staff members tested positive, 4 are active cases. Only one of the staff members is a Crane County resident, according to the release. Ector County confirmed 25 more cases of coronavirus on Friday. bringing the total to 325. The county has reported 151 probable cases. Ector County Health Department said 4,807 total tests have been taken, 3,982 negative tests, and 500 pending results. The Health Department has done contact tracing for 2,597 people. Of those, 60 people have tested positive for coronavirus. The Health Department has reported that 196 people have recovered. Anyone who was tested through Signature Care but didn't have a positive result must isolate for 14 days, according to the release. These individuals were told the Health Department would be contacting them, which is the process ECHD normally follow. However, because of the increase in the number of positive test results and the number of Health Department staffers, it is impossible to contact all the probable cases, according to the release. The department is in the process of hiring people to do contact tracing. Anyone who tested positive may contact the Health Department for recommendations or may self-isolate, according to the release.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, June 20th, 2020. Section A. ECISD orders PPE and works toward fall opening, by Ruth Campbell. To prepare for the upcoming school year, Ector County ISD has ordered personal protective equipment and is working on student and teacher schedules. Students will most likely return working remotely and face-to-face. Most of the face-to-face time would be for elementary students. Superintendent Scott Murray and Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction Lilia Nanez spoke on these and other subjects during a Facebook Live broadcast Thursday night. Murray said the most likely scenario will be hybrid, combining in-person and virtual instruction. Nanez said the virtual instruction in the fall would be in real time, so parents won't have to be their child's teacher. She added that the district is working on training for students so they can learn the framework for remote learning. We want to make sure we think about the importance of pre-K second grade, and we're working on schedules, Nanez said. On the question of the safety of children and teachers, Murray said ECISD has ordered more than 1 million face coverings, plastic face shields, ordered lots of gloves, thousands of gallons of hand sanitizer, and thermometers. We will do everything within our power, but with all that said, there are still opportunities for COVID-19 to infiltrate the school district, Murray said. The Texas Tribune reported Wednesday that Governor Greg Abbott said students will return to public schools in person this fall. The Texas Tribune reported Wednesday that Governor Greg Abbott said students will return to public schools in person this fall. Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath said if families have health concerns, their children can be educated remotely. Murray said some parents have already told ECISD they won't be sending their children to school this fall, so the remote education will be provided. Murray said the number of students who can return will be based on community behavior. If people wash their hands frequently, maintain social distancing, and wear a face covering, it will be more likely that the school district can welcome everyone back. 2 days ago at a board meeting, Murray said ECISD trustees approved a revised calendar for the fall. The community and staff were surveyed and the majority supported it, he said. There will be 180 student school days next year, with school starting August 12th. Murray added that there will be 30 days of operational half days at the end of the year for elementary school teachers. Nanez said there will also be a chance for secondary students to catch up on credits. Next summer is going to be a busy summer for ECISD kids, Murray said. If parents have questions, they can email Nanez at lilia.nanez@hectorcountyisd.org or contact the communications department at 456-9019. The district operates 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday through July 23rd during the summer. County reports 25 new cases. A Friday Hector County Health Department press release detailed that 325 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in the county. The Health Department website detailed that 273 of those confirmed cases are active and 151 results are probable. The release detailed that 500 test results are pending and 196 COVID-19 patients have recovered from the virus. 7 Hector County residents have died from coronavirus-related complications. The health department also detailed that anyone who tested positive at Signature Care must isolate for 14 days. We are aware that these individuals were told by the health department, were told that the health department would be contacting them, and that is the process we normally follow. However, due to the increase in positive test results and the amount of staff we have, it is impossible to contact all the probable cases. If you have tested positive and need information, please reach out to the health department for recommendations. Otherwise, self-isolate, the release states. 19 of the new cases were reported by Medical Center Hospital in a press release. MCH reported that 190 patients have tested positive for the virus at MCH, and 16 patients are in the hospital. 11 patients are on a designated floor. 3 of them are from Focused Care at Odessa Nursing Home. 2 are from the Ward County Hospital, and 1 is from Big Bend Regional. 5 patients are in the critical care unit, and 1 is on a ventilator. 1 of the patients is from Big Bend Regional, and another is from Focused Care at Crane. The release showed that 217 test results are pending and 3 persons of interest were in the emergency department as of 1:30 p.m. Friday. A Friday Crane County press release detailed that Focused Care at Crane Nursing Home has had 33 residents test positive and 15 are active. 15 staff members have tested positive at the facility and 4 cases are currently active. Crane County Judge Roy Hodges, in a Facebook post, wrote on top of the release that this has been an explosive week at the Focused Care at Crane facility. He wrote that 11 more residents have tested positive and they have started a second round of testing. He finished the update with a question. There are still 65 pending results. Local news roundup. Woman charged with knifing husband. A 31-year-old woman was arrested Tuesday after she reportedly stabbed her husband in the neck with a knife during an argument, an OPD affidavit detailed. Deja Latresse Stevens was charged with aggravated assault, family violence with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. OPD detailed they received a report regarding the assault at 11:58 p.m. in the 300 block of Wabash Avenue in Odessa. Officers arrived on the scene where they met Dandrielle Keith Stevens, who was bleeding from the neck. He reportedly held a white washcloth to his neck and said that he was stabbed by his wife, Deja, during an argument. Stevens reportedly told officers that he and his wife are trying to work things out due to their rocky relationship. He reportedly said he asked his wife to leave after the two began arguing over money issues. Stevens said his wife refused to leave, but then went outside and began damaging his vehicle with a knife. When Stevens followed his wife to stop her, she reportedly began to swing the knife towards him. He told officers that he pushed his wife down to get away, and after he tried to push her down a second time, she swung the knife and cut him on the throat, causing a medium-sized laceration. Stevens received medical attention and 5 stitches to the throat, the affidavit detailed. Jail records show Deja Stevens was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Thursday and has a surety bond of $20,000. Man charged with robbing a person riding a bicycle. A man was arrested Wednesday after he reportedly struck a man off his bicycle and stole money out of his pocket, an OPD affidavit detailed. Jeremy Ortiz, 28, was charged with robbery, a second-degree felony. Officers were reportedly dispatched at 7:18 p.m. to the Kent Quick in the 2400 block of East 8th Street in reference to a man wearing black shorts and no shirt who reportedly assaulted someone and took their property. The affidavit detailed that an officer saw Ortiz, who matched the description, in the 2200 block of East 8th. Ortiz reportedly had scrapes and cuts on his knees and elbows and $104 in U.S. currency in his pockets. Ortiz was read his Miranda rights and then admitted to taking money out of the victim's pocket after a physical altercation. Officers at the Kent Quick reportedly spoke with the victim, Anthony Kirksey, about the incident. Kirksey said that while he was riding his bike, he was struck in the head by Ortiz and knocked to the ground. Ortiz reportedly jumped on him and dug in his pockets while the two wrestled on the ground. Kirksey told officers that a bystander ran over to help him and that Ortiz got off the ground and ran away after taking his money. The bystander reportedly told officers that he saw a Hispanic male punch or push a black male off his bike and onto the ground, so he ran over and grabbed the Hispanic male's arm, but then he got away with some money. Jail records show that Ortiz was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Wednesday and has a surety bond of $25,000. DPS releases name of dead inmate. A Texas Department of Public Safety press release detailed updates regarding their investigation into the death of a 38-year-old Wallace Howell while he was in custody at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center June 15th. The release detailed that Howell had been involved in a vehicle pursuit at 12:18 a.m. after a Crane County Sheriff's deputy tried to stop him. Howell reportedly led the deputy into Ector County, where DPS troopers provided assistance. The release did not detail how the pursuit ended, but said that after the chase, Howell was arrested without incident and transferred to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center, where he was charged with evading in a motor vehicle. At 5:10 a.m., Howell reportedly became combative with another inmate in the same booking cell. Jail staff intervened, deploying a taser and pepper spray to restrain Howell. Nurses at the jail and jail staff reportedly checked on Howell, the report detailed, and at 6 a.m., Howell was found unresponsive in his cell. Staff began medical treatment, and Howell was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. The release states that autopsy results are pending. DPS detailed that the investigation is ongoing with the Texas Rangers and no additional information is available at this time.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, June the 21st, 2020. Section A. Here's a commentary by Evan Winston. Ewinston at MRT.com. Black Lives Matter is more than a rallying cry for the dead. I want to start this by simply saying that George Floyd was murdered. He did not sacrifice himself for a cause. He wanted to live. He wanted a better life. He just wanted to be a catalyst of change while he was living in Minneapolis. Emphasis on living. On May 25th, he just wanted to go to the store and purchase a few items. That's all. However, the clerk thought George had a counterfeit bill. A phone call to the police, and 8 minutes and 46 seconds later, he is no longer with us. Just that quick, all the work George did for himself, his family, Minneapolis, and his hometown of Houston, all gone. All gone because someone saw fit that his life was expendable. George Floyd was murdered. When another unarmed African-American gets killed by law enforcement, it eats away at the souls of those who are sympathetic and empathetic to the situation. More importantly, it eats away at the black community. People outside our community champion how strong and resilient we are, how we have endured so much from the transatlantic slave trade to Jim Crow and the rise and deaths of great civil rights leaders to the current Black Lives Matter movement. They see how we overcome and make leaps and bounds, but they need to know we are tired. This is fatigue that comes from simply uttering the names of Tamir Rice, Atatiana Jefferson, Botham Jean, Sandra Bland, Alton Sterling, Tanisha Anderson, Sean Bell, and Breonna Taylor. I stop there, but there are plenty more, unfortunately. We try to mourn one and shed tears for them, only to hear that another one has died. This is a never-ending roller coaster, and as those of you who have ridden roller coasters know, that after a while, you start getting sick. Which brings us to 2020, when it seems, no, it is a fact, that black people aren't just continuing to fight a racial epidemic, but a COVID-19 pandemic as well. A pandemic that has forced all of us indoors to save ourselves from this silent killer. A lot about this year does not sit well with me. Being quarantined in my room since March, while viewing the chaos that's going on through my phone, has brought tears to my eyes and a bad stomachache. This week, it got so bad that after I read stories of black bodies being found hanging from trees in Texas, I got a stomachache so bad I curled up in my bed, pounding the pillow, angry that these things have affected me in a way that I am physically in pain every night. It seems every day there has been an act of injustice against people who look like me. I should have used all my sick days to recharge, refocus, and come back to work. Yet, I still feel obligated to do my job as a copy editor and do it efficiently. So every day I muster up 8 hours to make sure I do my part in putting out a great product. That is the black experience, ladies and gentlemen. We suppress and put aside our pain so that we can do our jobs. Even though we have endured so much on a daily basis, we set aside 8 hours a day to be of service to everyone. This is a representation of how much African Americans love America, even though an argument can be made that, historically, the country does not love or appreciate them back. One thing that has caught my eye are the standards that corporations have, and haven't, made in response to the civil unrest and the fight against racism. It's easy to take issue with those who have kept quiet or those who have uttered the phrase, "All lives matter," in their statements. But I hold accountable the companies that have made statements that denounce racism, but haven't taken any actions to have diversity in their offices and boardrooms. How can you stand by a statement that you don't practice? How can you say Black Lives Matter, but have little to none working for you or even representing your brand? Blanket statements and blank checks cannot and will not be the reason we see meaningful change in America. Understand that the phrase Black Lives Matter isn't just a rallying cry for the dearly departed, but for a people who have felt like America's unwanted child. This phrase is said for Flint residents who still do not have clean water, and for those such as Khalif Browder, who have been incarcerated for crimes they did not commit, and have committed suicide because of the horrors and the pain they have endured. The statement rings louder for black women, who are 2 to 6 more times likely to die from complications of childbirth, and who, according to census data, earn 62 cents to every dollar, and who have only a small selection of hair care products and cosmetics compared to the selections for other women. This three-word statement is a demand, a cry, and even a song of faith. My faith is what is keeping me sane and somewhat happy. In this time of quarantine, I have been working on my faith and understanding what it is I can do to be a better person. I realized that this chronic stomach ache I suffered came from being plugged into my phone and viewing troubling videos for consecutive days. Unplugging and going for a walk around Wadley Barron Park has restored me to better health. Morning devotionals have increased my faith and calmed my spirit and given me perspective as to what is going on in the world and the importance of community. Co-workers have reached out to me about how I've been handling this time, and I appreciate them. Even former education reporter Brandy Addison has reached out. It means a lot that I have support here. Speaking of support, I'd like to commend Latricia Smith for organizing a demonstration here in Midland. That demonstration alone told me that the city of Midland cares about change, social justice, and wants to be on the right side of change. I love the fact that our city is addressing race. I believe the sign of a progressive city is when residents address difficult topics and how steadfast they are in advocating for those who historically have not had a voice but do now. Those who joined her in the peaceful protest and even members of the Midland Police Department joined hands and prayed together. I would like to think this city is headed toward positive change. I could be a fool for thinking this, but this young generation of Midlanders is willing to fight for a better future, and that has made me happy and proud during this time. Right now, we are experiencing a disturbing number of deaths between COVID-19 and the civil unrest. While this can trouble the mind and soul, we have ways to bring about life that can get us through. One way to do that is just to speak kindness and life to one another. Last Father's Day, I told you all about my father and how I appreciate him so much. One of his gifts is that he can speak life to you when you think all hope is lost. He reminds me a lot that God doesn't bring you to a situation that you can't handle. The last time I had a terrible stomach ache like this was when I was a child, and while there was a simple remedy for this, I panicked and thought I was going to die. I asked my dad, "Am I going to die?" He could have laughed it off and gave me a bottle of ginger ale to cure the ache, but instead he spoke calming words to me. "No, son, Daddy isn't going to let that happen to you." Boom! Stomach ache gone. Dad's words have healing power. Gianna Floyd won't have that anymore. Today is her first Father's Day without her father, George. Her growth and her healing, even at a young age, matters. So as we celebrate fathers everywhere today, my heart goes out to her and the children whose fathers have been taken away from us. May we continue to speak of life to those who have lost and continue to empower one another as we push through these tough times. Survey. City. Younger residents play role in coronavirus spike, from staff reports. The younger Midland County resident is the reason confirmed coronavirus cases have jumped in June. This past week was no different. Those in their 20s that have tested positive for coronavirus, 88, of the confirmed cases through Friday night, according to the city of Midland. Add in those Midlanders 0 to 19 and 30 to 39, and the combined total is 322 cases. Prior to the month of June, those three age ranges made up 129 cases. The Department of Health, State Health Services, reported this past week that Midland is also making its move up the list of counties when it comes to coronavirus cases. Last week, the DSHS had Midland ranked 50th in terms of total cases. On its website Saturday, the DSHS ranked Midland 42nd, and that doesn't include Midland's 35 confirmed cases announced Friday, a single-day record. In terms of source of exposure, the biggest increase week over week came from community transmission, which climbed from 29 to 82. The health department also reported that the number of residents that have recovered moved from 86 to 113. Those residents in home isolation climbed from 73 to 179 week over week.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, June 22nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Midland ISD to present reentry plans update, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD board members will receive a reentry planning update at today's meeting, which will be the first held at Bowie Fine Arts Academy Auditorium, 805 Elk Avenue, since February. The district had held virtual meetings in March, April, and May. The prepared materials for the presentation include the following parameters and assumptions. Maintain current staff while reducing the number of students who occupy the building simultaneously. Maximize the number of students who can be physically at school for face-to-face instruction. Offer innovative opportunities for students who benefit from virtual options. Establish district-wide structures while allowing flexibility to meet the unique needs of campuses and communities. Midland ISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins told the Reporter Telegram last week that meetings are being held with interested teachers and parents about reentry. Meetings with teachers were held last week, and meetings with parents are scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday. Invitations were sent via email to those who expressed interest in the survey that was sent out in late May. The presentation shows overviews to open, hybrid, and closed. The open campus plan included face-to-face instruction to the extent possible while maintaining social distancing in the classrooms. Students and staff encouraged to wear face masks, face shielding for teaching staff, and temperature checks taken at entrances. Using wipes and cleaners to clean surfaces between classes as needed, and prioritize cleaning and sanitizing of high traffic areas. Meals served in the classrooms. Temperature checks before boarding buses, touch surfaces regularly wiped down, and maximizing fresh air exchange. The hybrid plan calls for half the school to attend in the morning, half in the afternoon, and asynchronous student learning, teacher planning, and professional learning communities, PLCs, on Friday. Other features of the plan include students in life skills, pre-K through second grade, and English language newcomers attend for a full school day Monday through Friday. Students participating in extracurricular events may practice into the morning or afternoon. When students are not physically at school, they will participate in asynchronous learning. The closed plan involves classes performed through a virtual platform. Students will be provided training and future support in learning in a virtual environment. There is more information about the closed plan. But last week, Governor Greg Abbott announced Texas students will be returning to public schools in person this fall. It will be safe for Texas public school students, teachers, and staff to return to school campuses for in-person instruction this fall. but there will also be flexibility for families with health concerns so that their children can be educated remotely if the parent so chooses. Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath said last week in a Texas Tribune report.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, June 22, 2020. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403, Midland Urgent Care Clinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash prize for office visit, $120 to $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 nurse or 221-1111. Cash prize for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601, ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, will need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders. Source, Midland Health. Today in history. Today's Monday, June 22, the 174th day of 2020. There are 192 days left in the year. On this date, in 1944, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, more popularly known as the GI Bill of Rights. In 1977, John N. Mitchell became the first former U.S. Attorney General to go to prison as he began serving a sentence for his role in the Watergate cover-up. He was released 19 months later. In 1981, Mark David Chapman pleaded guilty to killing rock star John Lennon. In 1992, the U.S. Supreme Court, in RAV v. City of St. Paul, unanimously ruled that hate crime laws that banned cross-burning and similar expressions of racial bias violated free speech rights. In 2012, ex-Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky was convicted by a jury in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania on 45 counts of sexually assaulting 10 boys over 15 years. 5 years ago, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley said the Confederate flag should be removed from the grounds of the state capitol, reversing her position on the divisive symbol amid growing calls for it to be removed. Today's birthdays. Singer-actor Kris Kristofferson is 84, Fox News analyst Brit Hume is 77, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat, Massachusetts, is 71, actress Meryl Streep is 71, environmental activist Aaron Brockovich is 60, basketball Hall of Famer Clyde Drexler is 58, country musician Jimmy Wallace is 47.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, June 22nd. It's Deaf-Blind Awareness Week. This is a guest column written by Carol Keats, the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. One of my favorite quotes is from Helen Keller, "Alone we can do so little, together we can do so much." Helen Keller's story was required reading when I was in school. I hope that even though her story now is quite old, it still is told to our children. Helen Keller, despite profound disability, she was both deaf and blind, not only triumphed over those challenges in her own life, she set a magnificent example of the power of determination and persistence. One of the things Helen Keller did that is very dear to my heart is charge the Lions Club International with protecting sight. That is why the vast majority of eye banks across the U.S. and the world are managed by the Lions. She may not have had sight herself, but she has restored sight and given sight to millions through her work over her lifetime and beyond. and that is only one of her many, many accomplishments. In the words of the Helen Keller National Center for Deafblind Youths and Adults, quote, "Of all the obstacles people who are deafblind overcome, misconceptions don't have to be one of them," end quote. Like so many things, often the solution to creating opportunities and correcting diseases is awareness. In 1984, President Ronald Reagan issued a proclamation making the last week of June National Deafblind Awareness Week to help increase awareness of the issues that deafblind people face and hopefully make their obstacles fewer. When I was a kid, reading about Helen Keller, I remember thinking she had to be the only one. In reality, deafblindness, though rare, is more prevalent than most people think. According to the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commission, between 70,000 and 100,000 people in the U.S. are deafblind. Approximately 10,000 of those are children. There are several major causes for deafblindness. Genetic syndromes like CHARGE, Usher, and trisomy 21, congenital anomalies like hydrocephaly, cytomegalovirus, or microcephaly. It can be linked to fetal alcohol syndrome, maternal drug abuse, prematurity, AIDS, rubella, herpes, syphilis, and toxoplasmosis. It can also be caused by head injuries from trauma, stroke, encephalitis, meningitis, and hypoxia, that is, low blood oxygen, which can damage the brain. Deafblind does not necessarily mean no hearing and no sight. It is a range of hearing and sight disabilities, so some people may have some vision and some hearing, or some hearing and no vision, or some vision and no hearing, all the way to people like Helen Keller, who were completely deaf and completely blind. According to the Helen Keller National Center, there are many challenges for deafblind people, but one of the biggest is making sense of the world with the limited information they have available. Think about another person walking up to you. If you could not see or hear, how would you know you are being approached until that person is close enough to touch you? Knowing that, it's not surprising that many deafblind people, as they are learning to live with their disability, find the world an unpredictable, maybe even threatening place. Communication is also a big challenge. We have sign language for people who are deaf. We have Braille for people who cannot see. But how does the person who cannot see or hear communicate? Primarily through touch, and increasingly through technology advances. In the era of COVID and social distancing, which is a challenge to all of us, imagine how incredibly difficult it must be for those people who are deafblind, where every communication is also a potential exposure. The best thing we can all do in regard to deafblindness is prevention. Many of the causes of deafblindness are preventable. Good prenatal care can prevent many of these issues. It is so important for this reason and hundreds of others that pregnant women regularly visit with a healthcare provider who is qualified to provide prenatal care, such as obstetricians, family medicine physicians, nurse practitioners, or physician assistants that specialize in obstetrics, licensed nurse midwives. Seatbelts, airbags, and helmets can decrease the severity of head injury and trauma-related injuries. If you suspect you or someone you love is having a stroke, call 911 immediately so that stroke has the best possible chance of being treated. Several of the diseases that are related to deafblindness can be prevented with vaccination. Please take some time this week to think about hearing and sight and how precious they are. If you would like more information on deaf blindness, the National Center on Deaf Blindness, nationaldb.org, and the Helen Keller National Center for Deafblind Youths and Adults, helenkeller.org, are great resources. COVID-19 news. By the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 325. Ector County negative, 3,982 out of 4,807 tested, with 500 pending. 8 deaths. Midland County, 322 confirmed cases, 13 deaths. Texas, 111,601 confirmed cases, with 1,715,177 tested. Total Texas deaths, 2,182. U.S. cases, 2,248,029 confirmed cases, and 119,615 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Here is an Odessa American quick hit. Leadership Odessa is now accepting enrollment through August 14th. Program sessions are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every third Thursday of each month. Sessions and topics include orientation, September date to be announced, government and public safety, business and industry, history and culture, medical services, media and education, social services, John Maxwell Seminar and Roundup, and graduation. Leadership Odessa is a program of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce that attracts a diverse group of businessmen and women. Each class is comprised of 30-plus participants from a variety of sectors, including education, medical, small business, banking, industry, hospitality, and nonprofit. Enrollment is open to anyone who currently lives or works in Odessa and whose organization is a chamber member. If you are new to Odessa, it is the quickest way to get plugged into the community. Enrollment fee is $700, includes 7-day long sessions spaced over 9 months. Scholarships for one-half tuition may be available for nonprofit organizations. Limited availability. Classes formed on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information, call Lynn Van Amberg at 333-7862 or email lynnva@odessachamber.com. To enroll, visit odessachamber.com/programs/leadership-Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.